Hey, welcome back to the Voices of the Middle East. This is Gudarz Ektedari, your host, and welcome back to Voices of the Middle East. This is Gudarz Ektedari, your host for tonight. And what I would like to continue to show tonight is a recording of a forum that happened about a month ago at Multicultural Center at Portland State. And the speaker were Dennis Kucinich, U.S. Congressman and Democratic presidential candidate, and myself and Mr. Saleh Muslim. We talked about the U.S. foreign policy beyond Iraq, and I would like you to listen to as much as we can air from that introduction to the show. After this introductory comments, there were question answer, and it was very well attended. About 150 people came to that session. Mr. Saleh Muslim was a representative from Islamic Society of Portland, and let's listen to that.
Thank you very much, and I've been asked by two other panelists if I would begin first, so I will accede to their wishes. I want to thank Gudarz Ektedari for his participation in this, and also Saleh Muslim for his participation in the panel. This is a panel, so each of us will be making some brief remarks, and then the community discussion, which this moment helps to create, is going to be so imperative so that at this moment in our nation's history, we can hear many voices speak out, and from many voices, we can achieve a kind of oneness. The first motto of the United States was E Pluribus Unum, out of many, one. And so I believe that as a result of this discussion today, we will be able to achieve a kind of a oneness in intent, in hope, in striving. And I would like to welcome so many of our Muslim brothers and sisters here as well today by saying Assalamu Alaikum. And peace be to all who are here from every walk of life, every faith, every belief, and every non-belief. Welcome, one and all. It is indeed an important moment to be here at a multicultural center because such a center embraces the fullness of human possibilities for peaceful coexistence. Indeed, that idea is being challenged at this very moment. It is a result of an abandonment of peaceful coexistence, which resulted in our president standing with Mr. Sharon this week, basically making a decision that excluded one of the principal parties for whom the decision was made. And under such circumstances, we can only expect a continuation of isolation and violence. It is, I believe, next to the administration's policy failure in Iraq, one of the most devastating moments that has occurred, to have President Bush effectively abandon a peace process which involved talks with both Palestinians and Israelis. And by sitting down with Mr. Sharon and coming to conclusions about policy in the Middle East, President Bush has, in the name of our nation, closed a process towards a resolution, closed the path of process towards resolution off at a time that we should be opening up new paths. We cannot hope to achieve peaceful coexistence in that region without actively seeking the consistent participation of parties who have been faced with this conflict for decades, and where, unless the parties are looking each other in the eyes and opening up hearts to each other, there'll never be a resolution. President Bush has apparently set the United States on a path of closing off a discussion. So today, let us talk about how we might be able to open it up, how we have to insist that the United States reopen peace talks between Palestinians and Israelis, how we have to insist that the president's plan to endorse an approach which gives up an approach where Mr. Sharon transfers Gaza while not discussing the West Bank, that's not sufficient. There needs to be a new discussion. Whatever conclusion the parties come to is one thing, but just closing off a path to any discussion at all is another. It's a very dangerous moment that occurred. And because of what's happening in Iraq, of course, so much of what goes on in the Middle East gets subsumed, gets deflected. We aren't paying enough attention to what's going on between Israel and Palestine as a result of what's happening in Iraq. So today, in our panel discussion, I have no doubt that we are going to go much deeper into the issues of what might be done as a path to peace, because that's where our focus must always be. What is the path to peace? That must be the question. And how can the United States play a more effective role in it? So far, we've played a role in helping to ignite war. Let us talk of how we might be able to do something different. The same is true in Iraq. We've lost our moral authority to speak about resolving matters in Iraq when we ourselves are engaged in an illegal occupation of Iraq. How can we turn around How can we turn around and advise Ariel Sharon about his illegal occupations? Seriously, how can we do that when we have essentially, as a nation, our leaders preclude the United States coming up with an agreement that will bring in UN peacekeepers and bring our troops home? Until the United States is ready to recognize that nothing short of a peace agreement which will allow us to take a new position in the world that will enable the United Nations to function on an interim basis until the Iraqi people are self-governed, that would allow the United Nations peacekeepers to come in and create a peacekeeping force that will bring our troops home, until the United States ends its occupation in Iraq, we are headed towards an enduring conflict, one that will see our troops there for many, many years, one that will result in an expansion of the war, not a contraction of it, that will result in the further destabilization of Iraq, not the stabilization of Iraq. We must de-link this idea that the stabilization of Iraq is somehow achieved by the U.S. occupation of Iraq. It's the opposite. And so today, let us talk about the steps that we might be able to take, not only as a community, but as an American people who want to see our nation once again embrace worldwide cooperation. Here in this multicultural center, we celebrate the potential of human unity. We celebrate the potential that people can come from many different places on the face of the earth, can speak many different languages, can have many different religious practices, and yet can merge in an expression of common humanity. It is so powerful that we have the opportunity to feel that, even in this moment, because that's our home. Our home is in that expressive unity. Our home is in that oneness, in that interconnection, in that interdependence. It is not in the division, in the isolation, in the dichotomized thinking, in those thoughts which lead to war, but it is in the thoughts which lead to oneness and in the work of our hands which help to create a structure for that oneness. So here in a state where we know of pioneers who forged the path across a land, let us be pioneers for peace. Thank you.
I want to thank everybody here for allowing me this opportunity, actually, to talk to you. I'm very honored to be here.
This might be better.
Yeah.
Try that one, Sally.
I am very honored to be... Yeah, this is much better. Thank you. So I want to start my short talk, actually, on remarks that President Bush said last week concerning the right of return to the refugees, Palestinian refugees. And I just want to start with a question. And the question says, how many of us here know what is the UNRWA or UNRWA means? Yeah, it means the United Nations Relief and Works Agency. And this agency, I want to ask another question here. How many of us know why this United Nations agency was created in the first place? It was created in 1949 in response to the vast numbers of Palestinian people fleeing their homes into the neighboring countries and into basically the two main sites, Gaza Strip and the West Bank. And the neighboring countries, all of us know, they're Syria, Lebanon, and Jordan. So after the 1967 war, over 200,000 Palestinians, people fled their homes. That's in 1967. 200,000 of them. Half of them, which is 100,000, were of the 1948 refugees. So this is a double jeopardy for them. They're going refugees again. So as a direct painful result of this war, a large number of Palestinians, people migrated to neighboring countries, namely Jordan, Syria, and Lebanon. I want to share with you also that UNRWA has issued for each head of the family of these Palestinian peoples a registration card, which is, I have a copy of it. This copy, I had it from my dad, who passed away 11 years ago. And he gave it to me. And it's I have my number and, you know, the site that, you know, my dad and my grandfather and my grandmother, you know, used to live in Jordan. So each family has this registration card. And I had it from dad. My dad, as I mentioned, you know, 11 years ago, he passed away. Thank you. So he passed away waiting, actually. Passed away waiting for the international community, and on top of that, the United States also, because as a leader, to help them go back to their homeland, which is Palestine. And, you know, my family and my dad, you know, took or fled their homes in 1948, the first pass. So to give you an idea, those camps, to give you an idea of the dense, of how dense the population on these camps, let's zoom in into the Gaza Strip. The current statistics show that population is about 1.3 million people. 1.3 million people living in a strip. And the size of the strip, or the area, is 150 square miles. And I leave it to your imagination to think what type of life these people will have. So I want to say here that unless there is a just and fair resolution to the refugee issue, the social unrest and the problems will continue as a direct result of this type of life. And also I want to, since this is a short talk, it's just a starting point, I want to mention two facts. One is that in 1949, when the United Nations accepted Israel as a member of the United Nations, based on Resolution 273, and all of us, you know, can go to UNRWA, the website, and you know, check on these facts. Pending the acceptance of Israel as a member of the United Nations was pending implementing two other resolutions mentioned in that resolution, mainly 181 and the 194 one. And both of these resolutions call for a just, or call for the right of return of all the refugees who wants to return, or compensate the ones who does not want to return. And also in 1967, another resolution that was passed by the United Nations, it's number 242 and 237, in which both call for a just and fair solution for the refugee issue. So what I want to say here, that we have the resolutions long time ago, and they're registered, and everybody knows about them. But what we lack, or what the international community lack, and on top of them, the United States as a leader, is the will and the determination to implement those resolutions, to pressure both parties, not only a single party, to pressure both parties to come to a terms where they can resolve all these issues. And until then, unrest will continue, and we will just keep passing these registration cards generation to generation, and hoping that one time we'll resolve the refugee and the whole Palestine issue, or Palestinian-Israeli conflict. And I thank you for your time.
You were listening to Saleh Mosleh in a forum with Denis Kucinich and myself at Portland State. This was a forum about Middle East and U.S. policy beyond Iraq.
In my opinion, one of the most courageous politicians of this country, Congressman Kucinich. And I wish you well.
And I wish he was the front runner so we could go home and sleep well tonight. But the reality is different. I suppose I'm here to represent another point of view about the Middle East. And I try to be kind of precise and to the point. The fact that Arab-Israeli problem is the core of instability in the Middle East, I don't think anybody would argue against it. At the same time, I believe there are other issues that needs to be discussed, within our community, within the Middle Eastern community, and within the population that represent the region. It is an erroneous mistake and an erroneous assumption to believe that Middle East is a homogeneous religious state or region. The fact of the matter is, although 90% of the population are Muslim-born, there are about 5 or 6 million Jews, 6 million Christians, half a million Baha'is, more than 3 million of other religious denominations, Yazidis, Sufis, Hindus, that they are living in that area. And among the all these different religion registered, so to speak, population, there are a good percentage of them who are basically considered themselves, as myself, a secular. As a secularist, we do not believe that we are anti-religion. We have lived with our brothers and sisters of different faith, and those people of different faiths have lived together for thousands and thousands of years in that region. As we speak, the connection between Christians and Muslims in Palestine are stronger than ever. They are in the struggle as we speak. Even in this community, in Portland, Oregon, we have a very good connection between Christians and Muslims in this small area. There are many brothers of Jewish faiths, Christian faiths, and others who are volunteering to work as IMS people in the Palestine. Let's remember Rachel Khoury, who died about a year ago this time in Palestine with a American-sponsored bulldozer by Israeli army. These are all friends. We are all together in this struggle. But I also like to touch on issues that affect a economical, financial, and social revitalization of the Middle East. We do not need external prescriptions. Because of diversity of the region, because of different races, different nationalities, different countries, if you look around, you will see at least 10 flags of different countries in the region who each one of them represent different view of the world. Because of that, we need a homegrown democratic solution. We need a homegrown plan for future of the Middle East and not an external imposed, especially military oriented plan for the Middle East. And if United States wants to make the mistakes that it made in the past and continue with that, well, they're welcome to try it. The fact of the matter is in front of our eyes. Within the last year, more than 650 American soldiers, our brothers, sisters, sons, and daughters have been killed in Iraq because of miscalculation of part of the administration who did not and does not and do not want to learn from the history. The history of the Middle East shows that people in that region are ambition to find civil society, to find democracy, and to have a life that is just like any other part of the world. These are modernization of our society and is inevitable. But it's not going to happen with military force, and it's not going to happen with some paper, white paper written in a think tank in Washington, D.C. or in New York. The Constitution of Iraq should not and shall not be written in New York. It should have been written by the people of Iraq. I don't want to spend more time on our introduction piece, and would like to finish this part. I guess there's going to be a moderated question and answer after that. Thank you very much. You're listening to the Voices of the Middle East at KBOO 90.7 FM in Portland, Oregon. I'm Gudarz Ekhtedari, and the show is coming to an end. I just want to remind you about our first half of the show, which was about the Islamic studies courses at Portland State and the struggle they have in fundraising for that program. And I would like to invite you, if you can find any way to help the students who attended the show tonight, contact them at studentsforislam1word@hotmail.com. And their phone number is 503-725-5811. And just a reminder, they are in dire need of funding or kind of an initiation of ideas how they can raise $50,000 by end of June in order to have their program continue next year. Portland State University have informed them that if they cannot find $50,000 by end of June, they're going to discontinue Islamic studies courses, and they were saying that they have six courses offered every year. And it's very important for our community to keep these courses continue, because we need to know about Islam, and we need to learn about the Middle East and the Islamic religion and all the issues related to it. As they were mentioning, the courses are about women and Islam, it's about the spirituality of, and Islam, it's about Islam and fundamentalism, and fundamentalism and terrorism. So they are very important courses, and Portland State should continue, and I ask everybody to get involved and try to help these students raise the money that they need. And my show has also a website that you can log in and listen to previous programs that we have online on archive. The website address is www.voicesofthemiddleeast.com. Voices of the Middle East is one word. And again, my name is Gudarz Ekhtedari, and hope you enjoyed the show tonight. Thank you.